Locked On 76ers, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia 76ers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, this is welcome to Locked On 76ers. Here's your host, Keith Pompey. I got my man, Devine Givens, with me tonight. Devine is, y'all need to listen to him. My man's on 97.5. He has a great show. He's full of knowledge, not just basketball knowledge, I must say. My man knows everything about all sports. So if you don't listen to him, you better hurry up. And when we get done with this podcast, we're going to talk about the days that y'all can, you know, in the Philadelphia area where you can, you know, just find my man on the show. Hardworking brother. But, you know, for this Monday's podcast, we want to talk to y'all about this weekend's games and with the Sixers. The Sixers lost a heartbreaker, 102-101 to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we'd love to talk to y'all about that and then, you know, give y'all some little input about or insight about the upcoming game on tonight, Monday, against the Utah Jazz. So, Devine, what's up, bro?
Oh, not a lot, man. Like you said, a tough game tonight. First of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. A big fan, listen to the podcast quite a bit. But just in terms of what's going on, it's the Sixers, 0-5. So that's what's going on. Tough one, as you said, a heartbreaker against the Cleveland Cavaliers, 102-101. Had an opportunity at the end of the game, but unfortunately they fell short. And something that we're seeing kind of a pattern when they are in these games, that they can't seem to close things out.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, this past game was... I mean, think about it, dude. It was throwback night. They had the jerseys from the 66-67 team, Wilt Chamberlain, and they have the defending champs on the ropes.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it came out some crazy plays, but when you think about it, you know, they can make excuses or they can say that fouls weren't called, but they turned the ball over six times in, like, the last 3 minutes.
Yep.
You can't beat the last place team in the league doing that.
No, not at all.
You know?
Especially, as you mentioned, you're playing against the defending champions with LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love spearheading that team, and you cough up the ball that many times in the clutch. You have to be very protective of the basketball. Overall, they had 17 turnovers, but you're right. The ones that really cost them were down the stretch. And off those plays, off those turnovers, they got baskets, Keith. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that really hurt them. They were able to get baskets off. The Cleveland Cavaliers were able to get baskets off of those turnovers, which turned into those, as you know, those 5- and 6-point swings where now it's going against you. And then you, as a team, when you're a young team like the 76ers are, you start to look at each other and say, okay, what are we going to do here? Mm-hmm. Turn to the head coach, what are we going to do next? Now, you got to go out there and play, and you have to protect that basketball. Mm-hmm. And if you keep turning the ball over, it's not going to help you, especially, as you said, against a team like this, it's just not going to be in your favor.
Nah, it's not. And let's talk about that final play, though. Okay, the final play is when you know, they got 7.3 seconds left. They get the ball. They call the timeout. They try to go to Embiid, but they realize Embiid is double-teamed. So then they call it a 20-second TO. And then they come back, and then Gerald drives the lane. Do you think he was fouled?
From my vantage point, I thought he was fouled. But you know how it goes a lot of times. You're playing against the defending champs, as we mentioned already plenty of times in the very beginning of this podcast, where maybe that call is not going to go in your way, especially when it's 7.6 seconds on the clock. The referees are going to let you make the plays, let you decide the game.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And something like this happens, and it doesn't, again, go in your favor. Now, let me take you back a little bit. After the Cleveland Cavaliers missed the shot,
mm-hmm.
the Sixers brought the ball up, mm-hmm. two timeouts remaining on the clock. They didn't call timeout.
Yeah.
Brett Brown finally got the timeout. He sprinted all the way down towards the Cavaliers coaching box. Did you see him calling timeout prior to that? Where the referees just missed him, or did he simply decide late to call the timeout?
See, I didn't,
Keith, I'm wondering, why don't you call the timeout immediately? I understand you have a veteran, Sergio Rodriguez, on the floor. You have a veteran, Gerald Henderson, on the floor. But when you have the other young guys, maybe you need to call a timeout, set something up. I get that coaches a lot of times don't want to allow the defense mm-hmm. to set up. However, in this case, you had the champs on the ropes. You had the final play. And I think you needed to make that happen. So that was a little curious in my opinion.
Now, me personally, when it comes down to that, like, I think sometimes in the Sixers' case, when they do call timeout late in games, it comes back to haunt them.
Sure.
Because the thing is, I mean, if you notice, when they played the Orlando Magic, they had Nick Vucevic guarding Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they call a timeout, and then they bring Bismarck Biyombo in there, and he D'd Embiid up.
Good point.
So, you know, my thing is, I don't like, and I get it, like what you said, like if soon when they scored, Sixers would have called timeout then, I understand it. You know what I mean? But once you get to that point and you're, you know, running up the court, I don't know, man, because, like...
You wasted, you know, 6 precious seconds.
Well, you waste seconds. Not only that, it's like, you know, you letting a guy who has the defending champions, and I think Tyronn Lue is a very underrated coach.
Mm-hmm.
So you giving this guy right here an opportunity to, like, see what you're trying to do and then think. You know what I mean? Like, for instance, LeBron James is a smart dude. I don't want him in the huddle saying, yeah, coach, we need to do this, we need to do that. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely,
So that's the thing. That's the problem. But, again, I get it. They're young. They're, you know, sometimes you micromanage because you want to make sure your team wins. So I understand all that. But the problem is like, when you lose, you people on the pod, get people like you on the podcast.
questioning the play calling.
Yeah, questioning the play calling. Yeah, pressing the play calling. But, you know, let's talk about Robert Covington, man.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, if you look at his stats, okay, the brother was 1-for-10, 1-for-9 on threes. And then you say, okay, let me sweep it on the defensive end. He had 3 steals, a game-high 3 steals, or tied the game-high with J.R. Smith for 3 steals. And then he had 2 block shots.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like... You keep saying to yourself, like, why are you keeping this guy on the floor? But then you look at his defense, and he's playing well.
At 6'9", Keith, you look at Robert Covington, and we've seen him over the course of the time that he's been here, and you look at him, and you look at his frame at 6'9". He has that great wingspan. He's athletic. Maybe sometimes he's too lax. And you look at exactly what you're saying about his defensive ability, and he seems like he gets up for certain players, specific players, and he plays them well. But as you said, when you shoot 1-for-10, there aren't many times where you could defend him and say he needs to be on the floor. The fact that he can shoot, everyone knows that he can shoot, so that's part of the game plan. But they're going to run him off that three-point line. They're going to make him make another play, put the ball on the floor. And I saw him do it on that. We're looking at 1-for-10, 1-for-9. Yeah. The one shot that he made, the one shot that he took, he crossed over his defender, got to the basket, but he lost the ball going up. Something that he's not comfortable doing because he's not really good coming off that three-point line, stopping, maybe pulling up, or even getting to the basket, getting some contact, and finishing at the rim. He's not the best at that. But you're right. He's struggling right now. 1-for-10 is not going to get it done in 30 minutes, Keith.
Yeah.
And he has some really good looks, some really good looks. Now, he's a three-point specialist, but 1-for-9 is not going to get it from behind the arc.
Nah.
It's not going to help you out at all.
And it's not. And you know, and I understand, you know, like you said, he's not that guy as far as going to the cup. But he needs to do what Melo and I'm doing. He needs, right now, since he's struggling, he needs to go, like you said, he needs to go to the cup strong.
Strong.
Hard.
Yep.
Get to the foul line. Because the dude only, I mean, he took 10 shots. Like, you know, 1-for-10, 1-for-9 on threes. But he only went to the foul line once.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So he needs to go to the foul line. And he needs to basically start in and then gradually go out. Because his confidence is shot. Because I'm going to tell you, as good as his defense was, late in the game, it looked like it was a hot potato for him. You know what I mean? Like, he would get the ball and he would pass it right back.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you know, the Sixers aren't good enough to play 4-on-5.
Not at all.
Offensive end.
Not at all. As you said, he defensively playing well with the 3 steals, 2 blocks. He even had 8 defensive rebounds playing that small forward position. But, as you said again, you can't play hot potato. You can't do it. And when you mention Carmelo and those guys getting to the basket, the one thing when you mention those guys going to the basket, drawing that contact, it's, in Robert's case, in Covington's case, maybe getting to the free throw line, seeing the ball go through the net, as they people like to say in basketball, will give him that confidence, will have him feeling much better. If he starts in, as you said, and then drifts himself out because he's made maybe somewhere and around the elbow, get a jump shot, get something short, where now he has that confidence. He saw the ball go through the hoop and, again, drift back towards the three-point line where he's very comfortable. but it's not happening right now. Mm-hmm. He has to find another way. Mm-hmm. Does Brett Brown have to find another way in order to get him something easier and mm-hmm. start getting him going early? Because if it's not working and you start playing hot potato, especially in a game where it's close like this against an opponent mm-hmm. like this, where your crowd is behind you, mm-hmm. if you make one of those three-pointers, the place is going to erupt.
Yeah.
And now you have Cleveland on the other side trying to decide what they need to do. Now you give them another threat to have to defend on a last play like they just had.
Mm-hmm. And then you're talking about the crowd was behind you.
Big time.
But now the crowd is against them big time. You hear the boos?
They
man?
Started booing him when he touched the ball. Absolutely. And that's not something that you want.
Yeah. Now let's look at Dario. Dario had his hands full. I mean, here's the thing. Dario had 7 rebounds. You know, he shot 1 for 5. He had 3 points, and he had 4 personal fouls. You know, he got in some trouble. But he was on the court 7 minutes. But then you look at Ersan Ilyasova. I mean, this dude had 21 points. He was 4 for 6 on threes and 8 for 13 overall. You know, so the only problem is he was like a negative 20. But I can't get into that because
I agree.
Yeah, because he was balling.
He was balling.
Well, he was balling. Yeah. But the thing is, it's like, do you see the Sixers not understand, you know, Dario is the future. He's probably going to be a backup when Ben Simmons comes back. But do you think that they need to make that switch, man, and start Ilyasova?
And see, this is the thing that when you look at 17 minutes for Dario Saric, 1 Saric, I knew you have to say Saric, not Saric, 1 for 5 from the field, as you said, in the 4 fouls, that was a case also of Ilyasova playing so well. 8 for 13, 4 boards in those 28 minutes. But when I looked at Ilyasova, he knew what he wanted to do when he caught the ball. Dario Saric still thinking at times of what he wants to do with the basketball. A veteran like Ilyasova, even though he's coming into a new system and a new team and he's only been here for, what, 3-4 days?
Mm-hmm.
He knew, he had his mind made up what he was going to do. Caught the ball, took guys off the dribble a few times, pull-up jump shot. When he caught it from behind the arc, he knew he was pulling that jump shot, and it was wet. It was water, and it went in on the tune of 4 of 6 behind the arc. But again, we said 4 for 6, but he had four other field goals from inside mm-hmm. that 3-point arc. So he knew what he wanted to do. So when you look at the 17 minutes, and you mentioned possibly having Ilyasova now as your starting power forward over Dario Saric because he's still trying to figure the NBA game out, it's a possibility. I wouldn't do it just yet, but when you look at the 28 minutes, that just basically says, all right, well, Dario, we're going to give you your shot. But if you don't, we now have someone that we can really trust in a ninth-year mm-hmm. veteran with Ilyasova that could probably give us more production.
Mm-hmm. And I don't even think that if they go that way, like, you know, in a couple weeks or whatever, I don't think it's a knock on Dario. I mean, it's one of those things, let's be real now, Dario's been playing for a year now, like a whole year without a break.
I understand.
You know what I mean? He's also, he needs to learn the NBA game. You know what I mean? He needs to, because you know what? They're calling him for travel on plays that he would make overseas. It's not a travel. You know what I mean? He's strong. He's doing this, but the game is just fast for him.
Too fast.
Too fast. They have to let it slow down. So I think that, you know, you come in here, this guy that the guy who is your backup right now is a ninth-year vet. Maybe, you know, you can look and learn from him a little bit. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's only going to help him in the long run, I believe. Now, also, what do you think of Joel Embiid's night? I mean, you know, if you take away the 6 turnovers and you look at his stat line, it's like 4 blocks. He's 4 for 4 on threes, 22 points. You know, it seems like he had a solid game. 2 assists, you know, 6 rebounds. I mean, it seems like he had a solid game if you take away the turnovers.
Yeah, the eye test, when you watch it and you see the 22 points and the 6 rebounds, I like a few more rebounds in the 25 minutes. However, he was solid again, Keith. You mentioned the 6 turnovers. I get it. That's something that he needs to work on, because at the very beginning of the preseason against Boston, you were there in Amherst, where the first thing I noticed, even though he had a really good game, a really good debut, the first thing you see is, okay, you're going to get double teamed right away. You need to recognize that quicker. And that's something that's going to take some time. So the six turnovers, two of them came out down at the end in the clutch where he was double-teamed. He recognized it but didn't see basically the cornerback waiting to steal it and then jump in front of his pass. But just the things that he does, the footwork that he has on the block, the face-up game where now you see if Tristan Thompson or Channing Frye is defending him and he has them face up, they're face guarding him, he knows that, yes, I can either turn my back and back him down, but they're giving me this little bit of space because they're afraid of what I'm going to do, pounding them in the paint. Mm-hmm. So he has it all going for him. And even Keith, looking at the three-point shots that he's taken, he was 4-for-4 from behind the arc. Yeah. And they're all from the top of the key, straight away from the top of the key. And these guys are backing off of him. They know he can do it, but he's also shown that he can take guys off the dribble when they start to fly at him. So the scouting report says Joel Embiid can make a three-pointer. All in all, the all-around game, 22-6 in 25 minutes, again, a very solid outing for this young guy who, as you just mentioned with Dario Saric, Joel Embiid still doesn't know what he's doing. Mm-mm. Right? He still has no idea what's going on out there. It's picking up. He's had a nice preseason to get through it. He's had a nice four games to play in the regular season. But he has no idea what he's doing, and he's still putting up 22 points in 25 minutes. I'm impressed. I really am. Now, again, I need to see more in terms of recognizing the double team quicker, knowing where to go with the ball, because he did miss Robert Covington cutting on one particular point where if you hit him, that's a layup, or at least it's a foul because LeBron is very good at catching up and possibly blocking the shot from behind, as we saw in the finals. But if he can get that down where he's recognizing the defense and the double team coming quicker, he's really, really going to be a problem, Keith.
Yeah, he will.
He's already a problem.
Well, it's funny because did you see how, like, Tristan and Channing Frye kept bouncing off of him trying to defend him?
It reminded me of in the 2001 finals where Shaq just kept bouncing Dikembe off his back. He would back him down and just kept bouncing, mm-hmm. lifting him off his feet because he has that type of power and that type of strength. And he's 7'2", 275 pounds, doesn't know what he's doing, and still having that type of effect on a very good defender like Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, very good. Now, let's just move forward to tonight's game, Monday night's game against the Jazz. You know, the Jazz faced the Knicks on Sunday. But, you know, you're looking at this team, and I really don't like this lineup for the Sixers. I mean, you have, you know, Joe Johnson, they have Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, Rodney Hood, and George Hill.
And the possibility of Gordon Hayward being back for that game.
Exactly. I don't really like that matchup again for the Sixers. I mean, I don't.
I don't either. When you look at that lineup, and as good as Joel Embiid is, Rudy Gobert has a chance to be an all-league defender.
Mm-hmm.
At 7'1", 250, the height is not an issue.
Mm-mm.
Now, maybe in weight-wise, that could be a problem. But there are so many different options on the wing where Rodney Hood is fantastic. George Hill, a very good defender, is going to make things difficult for Sergio Rodriguez at the point guard position. Joe Johnson, a savvy vet, who is also going to make things difficult for a lot of these Sixer wings to have some success against the Utah Jazz. Very good coach team by Quinn Snyder. They have a lot of things coming off the bench with Joe Ingles. We'll see what happens with Dante Exum. But they have a lot of good talent on that Jazz roster. And for the Sixers to pick up their first win, they're going to have a tough night ahead of them tonight.
Yeah, that's going to be crazy. I mean, I shouldn't say crazy. It's just going to be hard. I mean, especially, you know, the thing is, this is like the Utah Jazz for the Sixers is the team that you don't want them facing. The reason being is because you look at their record, you know, they're hovering around 500, right? But they're not exactly the Cleveland Cavaliers where you say, man, y'all going to get smashed if you don't come with your A game.
Right.
I mean, guys, I mean, like, oh, well, we're playing this team. Next thing you look up, you're down by 25. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, and I don't like it. And then you look at George Hill, and some people may argue, you know, George Hill is a good player. I know he's scoring a lot of points, but it's not the George Hill from a couple years ago. Well, I mean, I still think that he's a okay, serviceable point guard. And then you got Rodney Hood, who basically is like, you know, the young guy who's coming of his own. But the guy who really scares me the most is Joe Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, I don't know if Dario can stick up with him athletically. And I don't know if Ersan is good enough to stick him.
Yeah.
Because they got him playing, well, actually, he's playing the three.
Yep.
But I don't know if, like, you know, with the switches and all that stuff, I don't know if they can deal with it. And then Robert, you say that's a good matchup, but then you go back to Favors. You know what I mean? So it just gets ugly. But Joe Johnson, you know, he's a guy who, I don't know if you remember it, but a couple years ago, he hit like 7 or 8 threes against the Sixers in one quarter.
When he was with the Atlanta Hawks.
Well, actually, it was in Brooklyn.
Oh, that was with the Nets? Okay.
Yeah, it was the Nets. Yeah, that was with the Nets. He scored like 30-something points in a quarter.
I remember that now.
So I just don't see it now. Covington may be able to get him, but then when they get to do the switching and he's going up against those bigs, it's going to get nasty. It could get nasty.
It could get nasty. And let's just start with Derek Favors real fast. We talk about Dario Saric.
Yeah.
And Dario Saric has a nice height. And I get that at standing at 6'9", 6'10". Derek Favors is a different 6'9", 6'10". He's a low post to the basket, 6'10", 265. And he's going to pound Dario Saric. So we're talking about getting in foul trouble against the Cleveland Cavaliers on Saturday night with the 4 fouls that Saric had. Derek Favors could also put Dario Saric in foul trouble. Joe Johnson with Robert Covington, when you look at that matchup, I agree with you. Robert's length could be something that's to his favor, but Joe Johnson is crafty. He's smart. He's a pretty good veteran. And he had a 29-point outing earlier in the season, and that's something that I think that they, as you mentioned, the switching, the possibilities, the switching when it comes to that, if you look at the small forward position, you would hope that it's only in the switching situation where it's Gerald Henderson and Rodney Hood, and somehow Covington is now on Rodney Hood. That's also a problem. However, you look, at least if Gerald Henderson is now on Joe Johnson, you feel a little more comfortable versus Dario Saric or Ilya Sova being switched out on Joe Johnson because of his penchant of getting loose. He's not as quick as he used to, but the handle hasn't been lost. The jump shot is still there, and if he gets going, he gets into a really good zone, and that can cause trouble. George Hill and Sergio Rodriguez, I'm a little surprised at the average of George Hill because I didn't expect him to be so high so early, but the way they move the ball, the Utah Jazz, everyone gets an opportunity to shoot the ball. And he's getting good shots. He's a smart veteran player who's going to take good shots. He could be troubled defensively for Sergio, where when you see Sergio Rodriguez shooting 3-for-9 against the Cleveland Cavaliers, I'm not really worried about that. It's everything else, because Sergio against the Cleveland Cavs had 11 assists, 3 turnovers, a very good floor game. George Hill is going to make sure he presses up, because it all starts with Rodriguez and Embiid with the Sixers offense. If you take away the head of the snake, which is of course Sergio Rodriguez because he's running the point, and not allow the Sixers to get in their sets, not get comfortable, when now you're making Gerald Henderson and Robert Covington make decisions where it's something that they're not accustomed to, and then getting the ball to Joel Embiid when there's not enough time on the clock and making him take shots that he doesn't want, that's to the Jazz's favor. So that's something that Coach Brown and the staff have to look at the film with the Jazz, figure out how they're going to do it, let these guys know when they get in certain situations, it has to start right away with Sergio Rodriguez and get them in their sets and getting their offense going quickly. Because if the Jazz get into their defensive principles and all, especially with Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors as spearheading their defense, the Sixers could have a rough night trying to get their first win.
Yeah, you're right. And the one matchup that's really going to be intriguing, is really going to be intriguing and a look at, is going to be Gobert against Embiid. I mean, Gobert headed into last night's game with 3 double-doubles. I mean, you know what I mean? He's 9th in the league in rebounds, 9th in the league in blocked shots. I mean, that's going to be a quality matchup.
It's going to be a good center matchup that night. Absolutely.
It's going to be a night.
24 minutes is still the minute restriction for Joel Embiid. So you would assume that the Jazz will have Gobert out defending Embiid a majority of that time. And it's going to be an interesting matchup because, as we just mentioned, seeing Tristan Thompson back up, a nice-sized guy, he has a nice NBA body, And Embiid is just moving him.
Yeah.
He's just moving him. Now, listen, with a Gobert being listed at 250 and 275 is Joel Embiid, he has a 25-pound advantage on Gobert, but he's a very good straight-up on-the-ball defender that Gobert is. So we'll see how difficult he can make those shots for Joel Embiid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, man, I want to thank you, but at the same time, before we get out of here, I want you to let people know when they can listen to you on the radio.
Well, if on the radio, 97.5 FM, The Fanatic in Philadelphia, you can catch me on Saturdays. Right around this time, we are on from anywhere from 4 to 7 o'clock during off football seasons based on the scheduling with the station. I'm normally 2 to 6 on Saturday afternoons. I'm also doing Eagles pregame show on Sundays, 3 hours before kickoff, so that's one of my other responsibilities. And, of course, the Sixers and 60 that I do around the team at least 10 times a year on 97.5. And, of course, on Twitter, I'm at DevonG975. That's DevonG975.
Okay, thanks. And, you know, I guess I compete against them, but I must admit that I like that Sixers show that you had.
Sixers and 60?
Yeah.
I like that a lot. It's funny you say we compete against each other, but you know, I never look at it like that
because we
talk basketball. We, you know, even with the writing part, you know, just getting advice from you about writing and just doing a little bit with 4phillysports.com, trying to write as much as I can about the team. And Keith has always been, he's never been afraid to help me out, even though I'm on the other side trying to make sure I get some clicks as well. So I appreciate it, and thank you for having me on the podcast, man.
But now who gave you money to say the nice thing?
That was 97.5. They gave you the money to do that.
Well, look, man, but I really appreciate you, and y'all need to do yourself a favor and listen to the shows he talked about. I mean, I'm not just saying this because he's here, but he's very insightful. He knows a lot of things, and every time he's on, I make a point to listen because, you know, sometimes you listen to people and you're like, oh, man, I don't agree with this dude saying. But with my man, it's like he gives you the insight, and he knows. And to be honest with you, I go there and I learn stuff. So it's good. It's good to have you on the show, and thanks for, you know, joining me on this podcast.
My pleasure.
And I guess I'll see you at tonight's game. But I want to thank y'all for listening in, and have a great night. And watch the game, and let's see what the Sixers can do. Peace out. It didn't come on. I had the volume. Oops.